Welcome to In the Frame, an exciting new podcast series where we're delighted to be touring the UK, meeting business leaders, and taking a look at the big picture of what makes businesses tick. I'm Paul Kempster.
And I'm Andrea DeLay. And together we co-head the mid-corporate business for Barclays, as well as being co-hosts for this podcast series. Today I'm in Hemel Hempstead and I'm joined by Mitesh Danak, founder of Precious Homes, and I'm also with Rachel Budge, who is the head of our local team here in Hertfordshire. We've also got Adrian Summers with us, who is wealth manager at Barclays. So thank you everybody very much for joining me here today. It's great to see you all, and I'm really looking forward, Mitesh, to hearing more about the big picture of your business and the journey that you've been on. So I think let's start at the beginning. You're in the healthcare business. So can you tell us how you got into the healthcare sector?
Sure, absolutely. I was actually on a graduate training program with the NatWest Markets. I'm not sure whether I'm supposed to mention that or not. It's the competition. I was, you know, doing that and quite happily getting on with it. But I was thinking of what else I could do. And the only other thing I was kind of exposed to was buy to let, which my family, my brother and my dad used to do. So I started with my first buy to let, which was a flat, and that worked out really well. And I sold it and I made a good amount of money. I then started looking at the next project and found another property, which I started to do up. And it was at that stage I just decided to take the leap and leave banking. I then refurbed the second property, rented that out, and then I was running out of money to purchase the next property. And it was like, well, what else can I do? And it was whilst I was sort of looking and thinking about all that, I just came across a couple of people who actually worked in learning disability homes. I mean, one of them actually used to be a tenant in one of my dad's properties. And it was from that sort of encounter, I just thought, oh, maybe I should look into that. And I was quite young and naive, and I just thought, yes, I can definitely do that, and embarked on a journey of opening a learning disability home. And that is how I started with my first home.
Brilliant. Okay, so you went from banking to property and then into healthcare.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So which sectors of healthcare are you in? You said...
So we currently, our main business, which is Precious Homes, operates over 60 units nationwide, and that's for adults with learning disabilities and who present with complex behavior. As well as that, we operate in separate companies, a couple of nursing homes, and we also have family assessment centers.
And I know it's quite a challenging sector, I'm sure, in lots of ways to operate in. So what would you say the main challenges are that your business faces?
So, you know, healthcare and especially social care, but in fact, all healthcare, I would say, relies on team members. And that is what we have to absolutely get right. People come into this sector to make a difference. And we need to, as responsible employers, need to make sure we give them the best possible package in terms of the competitive salary, but also working conditions. And that is the big challenge of getting all that to balance up, because fees we receive are dictated by local authorities and central government. And there's only so much flexibility we then have in terms of the pay rates we can offer. So that's always a challenge. And of course, post-Brexit, we've had all the challenges with a shrinking workforce. COVID also has had an impact. So all of these have really made the recruitment and retention of team members a huge challenge. As well as that, of course, we have the regulatory challenge. This is a regulated environment. It's like a trading license. It's like your FCA or whatever it is, licensing. Without it, you can't trade. So it's key that you get that right, and you get that right first time.
Yeah, and is there any advice you'd give to other businesses on, I suppose, getting that right first time?
Even we got it wrong just the other month, 2 months ago. So despite all of the stuff that we do. So I'm not sure what advice I'd give you, but, you know, what I would say about quality and maintaining quality is having the right culture within the organization, in the home. If you get that culture right and people are doing things correctly from the outset, it will all be fine. And we have to make sure there's consistency. And the problem is when you have high turnover of team members, that gets lost. And you have to keep reinforcing that. So that's another challenge that we have to always navigate our way through. But overall, it still is a good sector. And at least every day we know we're making a difference in people's lives. And that's very sort of rewarding and satisfying.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think actually all businesses that we speak to, I think most of them say that the number one challenge is staffing and that, you know, the retention of people and the recruitment of people. And I think in this sector, people must need to feel dedicated, don't they, and need to want to work in the sector because it must be quite difficult at times for people.
It absolutely is. And, you know, let me take you back to April, May 2020, and you are being asked to go and work in a care home. You don't know anything about how dangerous COVID can be, and people are showing up day in, day out. It's just phenomenal what people in social care do. They're just unrecognized heroes, and they do that day in, day out.
So Mitesh, what really interests me is that you seem to be really, really passionate about the sector that you have your business in. But obviously when you first started about talking about your career journey, it was more around the fact that you were passionate about owning your own business. So I've just been really interested to hear what came first, the passion for the business and then the passion in the sector has grown, or the passion in the sector that made you want to start your own business?
Because I went into the work that I went into, I've become more passionate. Yeah. Look, and even today, you know, one of the things I do is I'm actually chair of a committee that does care home open. We kind of, if you come across that, we open our door, well, we encourage all care homes to open the doors. Unless you're of a certain age where you're looking for your parents a care home, or you've had a disabled child or something, you know, or a brother or whatever, you absolutely know nothing about social care, or you just don't touch it in any way. So you don't know. So, you know, and I was in that boat. I didn't have a clue what went on, or, you know, because I just wasn't exposed to it. But once you do get exposed to it and you see what difference you make in people's lives, I mean, it's just really powerful. It's really powerful. Recently, we had some person who actually came in on a really high package, and now they're actually going to go and live on their own completely independently. And I think they're even going to pursue some sort of education.
That is incredible.
So it's stories like that. We don't have them every day, unfortunately. But, you know, it's that sort of stuff. And I don't do that. It's the guys on the ground who do that. But I feel a part of it. And that's really, really rewarding.
Yeah.
In fact, just the other day, so once a month I get like a roundup of the compliments, etc., from the home in Cheltenham. And this one particular lady, she'd written to the manager, and then she wrote to me to just say, you guys have really made a difference in my dad's life. He was in a home where they couldn't really cope with that, someone who had dementia and, you know, was presenting with behavior. And then he came to our home, which is a specialist dementia home. And the team just really worked well with him, and he just settled a lot more. And it's very touching.
And that comes down to your team, doesn't it? And the people that do it and why they're so important.
Yeah. But just in society, you know, they make such a contribution.
Yeah. And the business has grown quite substantially, hasn't it? Tell us a bit about the growth of the business and how that's developed.
So in terms of the journey, I think I was sort of bumbling along for the first sort of 5 to 8 years. And I was also restricted in terms of capital. So I had to wait for profits to be retained and use that for the next acquisition. So there's a bit of that. Also, I was content with making enough money so it was covering kind of like my salary, which I would have had when I was working in the bank. So that was kind of like the mindset. And I was growing a little bit, but it wasn't like I was pushing myself or even had any ideas of having a 3-year plan or a 5-year plan or anything like that. It was more about the plan for Friday night and Saturday night. And that was going out. But that kind of like evolved and changed. And, you know, I suppose it's just like all of us, as we mature, you start thinking about things. You then come across other people who are doing a similar in terms of running a group of homes. And it was from meeting like-minded people like that I started to kind of like learn from others and went on this journey of growing the business. And that's exactly where a partner like Barclays are instrumental in helping you get to that next stage. In my case, that was a small group of homes in the Milton Keynes area, and Barclays helps us with the funding of that. And that took us to the sort of like next stage and the first time we ventured out of London. And then after that, it's been organic growth in areas where there was demand. And most recently, we've gone down the acquisition route and done a couple of acquisitions as well. So it's been a combination of all of that, which has got us to the position we're in today. Along the way, tons and tons of bumps, potholes, whatever you want to call them, and lots of learnings. But I think that's part and parcel of being in business. And my analogy is very much, as long as you're still at the crease, it's fine. You know, you're not going to score sixes every day, but you just have to remain at the crease. And then that's how I try and operate.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you. And look, thanks for mentioning Barclays there. So the relationship you've had with the bank's been important, and it sounds like we've helped you with the funding. What do you think makes a good relationship with the bank? What's important to you?
So for me, the two important things are, number one, the consistency in the team that you work with. And I've been very fortunate. I've had the same relationship director since 2011 when I first started working with Barclays. And then the second thing is their knowledge of the sector. And again, my relationship director, Tony Perez, is steeped in the healthcare sector. So he knows what we're trying to achieve, fully understands it, and therefore can explain that to his credit team, etc. And to date, even tricky transactions, he's managed to land them all for us. So, you know, very, very pleased with the support we've had from our funding partner in Barclays.
It's really great to hear that, Mitesh, because it is really important to us at Barclays to make sure that we retain some kind of consistency around the relationship. We like our relationship directors to have their relationships for as long as possible. And obviously with the industry specialism, we are just a lot better at understanding what keeps people awake at night in that particular industry. So the fact that that has worked with you and that you are seeing the benefit of that is really, really positive to hear. Thank you.
The payments landscape is changing at pace for SME businesses across the UK. Technological innovations mean treasury functions are now involved more than ever in shaping their company's growth strategy. From liquidity to foreign exchange, cybersecurity to international trade payments, embracing these digital enhancements can give your business the competitive edge you're looking for. Go to barclayscorporate.com and search Optimize Your Business to discover how your organization can make the most of the changing payments landscape.
And so just back to the growth of the business, Mitesh, can I just ask, did it grow as you expected it to grow, or did it a lot of it sort of happen as you were going along? You know, the goals at the outset, did they change as you went along?
To be honest, I didn't really have goals at the outset. As I said, it was more about doing something that funded the lifestyle. But I would say over the last sort of like 6-7 years, we have become very strategic and also professionalizing the business. Now, again, my background, my parents had a small jewelry shop. And the mentality was, in the nicest possible way, a shopkeeper mentality. And that's what I grew up with, and that's all I knew. So the transition from that to something where you have to invest in people, and that's a nice way of saying you have to pay people a lot of money to work for you, and you know, to get that right caliber of people to come and join the organization. So that's the transition I've been on. And today we have a senior management team that actually run the business day to day.
Yeah. So there's a lot of professionalism now that needs to be, and there clearly is in the business, isn't there?
Yes, correct. And sorry, in answer to your question, so over the 5 to 7 years, they have been more strategic. And then obviously we're working towards getting a senior management team. Yes, again, you know, some people have fitted in, some haven't. So, you know, there is a bit of trial and error, but I've learned along the way, and we have a strong management team in place now.
Yeah, which is absolutely critical, isn't it? And support for you, clearly, with the, you know, with the scale of the business. And so the longer term strategy for you and your business, how do you think about that if you looked out for the next sort of 5 years?
So with our management team, we've basically drawn up a strategy for the organization or for the company over the next 5 years. And we've got a 3-year plan that's quite detailed. And the idea is to make sure that our quality is right up there, which is what we spoke about earlier in terms of the regulator and getting our ratings right. And, you know, the governance piece is critical to the success of a regulated business. So, you know, we're really keen to make sure we get that right. As well as that, all our people processes, again, we're investing a lot in that to make sure our team members feel valued, that our team members are looked after. And then outside of that, in terms of commercial indicators, we have a plan to ramp up occupancy in some of our units. And thereafter, there'll be a bit of organic growth as well as some more acquisitions down the line.
Yeah. Great. So exciting times ahead, and you're looking at growth and expansion. And Mitesh, you haven't mentioned selling the business because you're clearly investing and, you know, in growing the business. But have you thought about selling the business at all? Or is that something you would think about potentially?
Absolutely. It's not something I've ruled out. But at the moment, we have a plan that we're delivering on. What I would say is it's always very good housekeeping to make sure all your governance in terms of all your financial records, etc., is in good order, because you just never know when you might think about selling. And it's no point at that point then start thinking about, oh, well, what do I need to put together for that? So as an organization, we are data ready if we had to go down a sale process. Not 100%, but I would say we're at least 60-70% there. And that's just good housekeeping and running an organization properly, I would say.
I think that's excellent advice. And Adrian, I might just bring you in now, actually, because you work in our wealth management business. So you must see a lot of businesses preparing for sale. What do you think the key considerations and things are for people to think about in that position?
Yeah, I mean, with my role, I deal primarily with entrepreneurs that are either building their business and got to a level where they've started to look at wealth management, or they're going through a sale and therefore are thinking about the future and what they should be thinking about to prepare for that post-event situation for themselves. So I think the most important things are, Mitesh picked up on one of them, is having that management team. So having an idea about your strategy for exit, because there's multiple different ways that you can exit a business, whether it be trade sale, management buyout or management buy-in, employee ownership trust, lots of different options. But to facilitate some of those options, you've got to have the right pieces in place with the business to help them achieve that. Certainly with one of them is having a management team, because if your business is solely reliant on you, potentially there isn't as much value in that business as you may think, because take you out of that business, it may fundamentally not be able to continue at the same sort of level that it has been. Whereas if you bring in a management team that can help facilitate that, it can continue running even if you extricate yourself. And whether they end up taking the business over and managing it, or you sell to another person and they know they've got a strong team that can carry on managing it, that's probably fundamentally going to be how you get as much value as you possibly can from that business. And the other things that you want to start thinking about is, what does life look like post that sale? So you obviously want to go off into retirement, you want to head off into the sunset, and you want to enjoy that time having worked incredibly hard to build that business. And you want to make sure that that value that you achieve for your business is going to allow you to do that. Because there's probably little point in you building a business, selling it, and then finding out some way through retirement that you've run out of money, because that's not really what you want to do, having spent 20 years enjoying the sunshine to have to go back to work again. So the fundamentals, I think, are quite important there.
Yeah. And then just on the value is clearly going to be the key point for people who are looking to sell. How can people get comfortable that they're getting the right price and value for the business if they sell?
So, I mean, there are obviously technical ways of doing that, looking at the financials of the business, and depending on what type of sector you're in, there'll be multiples that people be aware of. I think to get a good gauge on that, it's bringing in individuals and professionals that understand the sale of businesses. So whether that be your accountant, having accountants that specialize potentially in sale of businesses, even more so in your sector, so they understand what kind of multiples businesses in your sector tend to achieve. You may also want to look at a corporate finance team, because they will be able to make sure that your business is well set up. So Mitesh, you touched on about the financials and having your accounts in good order for sale, it makes the process that much easier. And if you aren't particularly certain about how to go about doing that, a professional body like a corporate finance team around you that will help you do that, make sure you've got your admin bits in a good state, will help with that sale. So I definitely encourage people to, if they're thinking about sale, start having those conversations early with the right professionals, be it your accountant. Solicitors are also important in that transaction, because again, if you haven't got your articles of association and your ownership clearly laid out when you come to sale, that's going to make it very difficult for a buyer to sort through all of that. So lots of people that can be involved in it. And I'd say start having those conversations early when you're thinking about that process, because it's not something you can do overnight.
And you mentioned about, you know, advisors, professional advisors. So Mitesh, how are you with your group of advisors and support?
So we have a set of accountants and lawyers who we work with regularly on our acquisitions and who have been advising the company over the years. So we obviously have those in place and they are our go-to. As well as that, from time to time, we'll go to specialists for any specific advice we need. Tends to be more around the regulatory side. And then we do have a couple of sort of non-execs on our board who are seasoned veterans, I suppose, in the sector. But again, you know, I would advise that you need to get to know these people, understand them. And we've been through a few before we're happy with what we've settled with now. And also, over time, your business will change and you need to keep refreshing the team.
Mitesh makes a good point in that you shouldn't always think that necessarily the person you're working with at that time is the right person to do that next job. So you might have an accountant that does your tax return each year. It doesn't mean that they're specialized enough to have a conversation with you about selling your business. So don't naturally assume that just because they have a title that they're going to be the best individual to deal with. There may be occasions where you have to bring in another individual that specializes in what you're trying to achieve to make it happen.
Yeah, and I think that applies to non-execs as well, because I think you might want different non-execs for a specific reason. That might be to bring some ESG specialism or diversity. There can be quite a specific reason.
And also you outgrow or can outgrow the non-execs. You know, when I first started, the non-exec I was working with was working in smaller businesses. We've since grown. And you need someone who's actually been working in a much bigger business so that they have that vision to take you to that next level, rather than expecting the current person to grow along with you. And just generally, it's a bit like a football manager. You just need to keep refreshing your team and making sure you have the sort of the best talent you can afford.
How do you find those people, or do they find you?
Very good question. I would say it's more asking lawyers, accountants. Your network, I would say, is where I have found mine from. I also get a lot of inbound approaches, and there's no harm in meeting them and vetting them. I haven't actually gone with any of those, so I can't really say that that's worked for me or not, but I wouldn't rule that out.
Yes, I think that your networking is really important. And do you sort of make a conscious effort to do that, or has it just morphed as you've become more established in the sector?
I would say it's very important to network, and it's that balance between doing work or being at some event. But I found that it's been beneficial to actually go out and just meet different people. Very simple example, you know, even with my relationship director at Barclays, with Tony, we do meet regularly. I think face-to-face interaction, even with someone even when you're working with them, it just breaks down barriers. People know exactly where they stand, and you just get better outcomes. So I'm a huge believer in pressing the flesh.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And it's great that we're all back in the office.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
Just a few other comments. Be good to hear from you, Mitesh, around just a bit more personally, really. So I suppose as you look back, you've been very successful and the business is in good shape, and there's, you know, exciting times ahead. Is there any advice you'd give to your younger self if you were to start again?
The first thing I'd say is, you know, not all that glitters is gold. We are facing challenges currently. And, you know, it's part and parcel of being in business, as I said earlier. In terms of what advice I'd give my younger self, I'd probably say that I should have compartmentalized work time and play time and balance that a bit better. I think the balance was very much on playtime, and that probably is one piece of advice I'd give my younger self.
Well, look, you haven't done badly on it, so. And if you were to start again as well, would you have a dream job that's quite different to this?
I would say I really enjoy what I do. In terms of variety, it's huge. You know, because of the kind of sector we're in, we do a lot of building work, which I love, starting buying a rundown building or a site and building something on there. So I get to do that. We get to actually work with vulnerable people and make a difference in their lives. You know, there's just so many things which is great in what I do every day. So I'm quite happy with what I do.
Yeah, no, it's great. And look, you're obviously helping people in a really the most meaningful way, actually, in the community. And is there any opportunities that you feel you've missed, if you look back, or wish you'd taken?
No, I'm quite philosophical about that. You know, sometimes it's not meant to be. But in most cases, we've always managed to secure the opportunities we had. So, yeah, I don't look back with regret. Sounds like a lyric from a song, doesn't it?
Well, I think that's a really positive note to end on, Mitesh. Look, thank you. You know, thank you for partnering with Barclays. And I'm glad we've been able to support you. And thank you for your time today. It's been really interesting.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to follow us to receive notifications of new episodes as they go live. For more insights or to find out how we can support your business, go to barclayscorporate.com. Copyright Barclays Corporate Banking, all rights reserved. Terms and conditions available at barclayscorporate.com.